Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding, available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover our new autumn collection with fresh designs and cozy colours in store or at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Live Line. So what's it going to be? The corpse bride, the ghost, the witch, the mummy, the skeleton, the creepy clown, the nun, the grim reaper, the werewolf, the vampire, the zombie, Wednesday Adams from the Adams family, or the devil? What's it going to be? Seamus O'Rourke. Seamus, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
How are you? I see now. You're nominated in the Irish Book Awards for your memoir, Leaning on Gates.
From the old book, yeah.
Is there any, Seamus, is there any beginning to your talent?
There is no beginning. and no middle, no. No, there isn't.
Leaning on Gate. And it's up there, it's number two or three every week, I see.
It's doing great.
Yeah, okay, Seamus, okay. You want to recount a real-life event involving the Stray Sod. Eerie music.
Well, first of all, I'm not one of these gatherers of scary stories, and we're all fairly realistic in Leitrim. Otherwise, we wouldn't stay, you know. But there's a couple of neighbours of ours over the road. They were brother and sister, Michael May and Michael Quinn, and May was she had the look of a witch when we were kids. Big bushy hair and they were kind of odd, but everyone was odd at the time. May was quite bossy, and she had Michael, she had given him all sorts of rules, and there was always talk that Michael didn't always adhere to these rules. And it was always around this time of the year, and I'm not saying exactly on Halloween, but at this time of the year when the evenings start getting short, and of course the big course in rural Ireland, especially back then, was the darkness, because we only had a 40-watt bulb in the kitchen and a 60-watt bulb for an outside light. It's not like nowadays where they'd light up, everyone's house is lit up like an airport. But the story is, and this is the real story, May had to go to hospital, and Michael was at home, and he went out to look at cattle.
Okay.
And he stepped on a stray sod. Now, I'm not into all that, but first of all, the reality of it is that Michael Quinn went missing because his cows were roaring in the morning and they hadn't been fed.
Seamus, what's a stray sod?
Well, a stray sod is supposed to be if you go into a field.
Yeah.
And he says, step on a stray sod, it means that you have been more or less hypnotized by the fairies and you can't get out of that field. They have you trapped.
Ah.
And the only antidote, and this is why we know he stepped on a stray sod, the way of getting out of this, or the old tale, was that you turn your coat inside out.
Okay.
And anyway, we as neighbours for 3 days were looking for Michael Quinn. He couldn't be found anywhere. His sister May was in hospital, and eventually we found the man sitting on an embankment, sitting up straight with his coat turned inside out. He had a fag in his mouth, which he had just lit, and it had burned away because the entire ash of the cigarette was still on the cigarette, and he was dead.
Wow.
And by the fact that he hadn't taken, you know, the cigarette hadn't fallen out of his mouth, by the fact that he had he seemed to be in quite a happy state, in that he had almost like a smile on his face, but he was gone.
And when you say, to come back a bit, how would I recognise that I've stood on a stray sod?
Well, if you, and I know, you see, the problem is you wouldn't know because you live in the city. And when you go to the country, you stay in a nice hotel. But I'm talking about being out in your Wellingtons looking for cats.
And would I trip on a stray sod? Would I ankle?
I mean, some people, I don't, I have no experience of it apart from I have heard people saying, you know, when they've had too much to drink and they're in a strange hotel room and they go around and they find the wardrobe and they think that's the bathroom. That's a kind of like when you step on a strange sauna. Okay. It's the same thing. You go into a field and you just can't make your way around it. And okay. you go around all the hedges and doesn't seem to be a gap anywhere to get out. And that's what happened.
What is the significance of turning your coat inside out?
That's what I don't know. You'll have to get on a fairy expert for that. I suppose the stranger thing is that I have brought up this story several times mm-hmm. over the years, and people just seem to accept this, and the same way as they accept, you know, that on lots of people's farms there is a fairy tree or lone bush, as we call it, and you know, I'm sure you've talked about this before, yeah. The fairy forts and all that. But it was the only time that the reality of all that came to fruition. Now, of course, we can the cynics will say, well, the man just got a heart attack and
hypothermia, whatever. Well, was there an inquest? Yeah. Was there an inquest? There is still a mystery.
Well, it's a mystery because I mean, the inquest he seemed to die of natural causes. There was certainly no struggle, and what a way to go! I mean, waste of a fag, I suppose. But apart from that.
And was his coat inside out? No, it wasn't because it
was inside out.
Oh, it was
Yeah. Okay.
See, the only time I ever heard stories, and by the way, that story is in your wonderful memoir, Leaning on Gates, and in fact, you tell it better in the book.
No, I'm only messing.
But the only time I was ever told, I go to Inishman a fair bit, the Middle Islands. Obviously, and the Arden Islands, and as you know, every field is walled with this incredible weaving and intricate stonework held together by gravity and nothing to do with any cement or sod or whatever. But what they say is, if you get into a field, if you are stupid enough to try and take a shortcut through one of those fields, you'll never get out. Because you climb over a wall and you will never be able to find your way. In fact, they say the only way to get you out is by a helicopter. Because it becomes... Say there, Seamus, for a sec. Paddy O'Brien. Paddy.
Well, Joe, how are you doing?
Did you ever hear the stray sod?
I did indeed, yeah.
Can you explain it to me any better than the award-winning nominee there, Mr. O'Rourke?
Ah, sure, you couldn't bait the later men, like, sure, jeepers, like. Joe, there's a mystery behind all that stuff, like, you're better off not knowing.
Okay, I understand that. See, the known unknowns and the unknown unknowns, yeah, okay, so it's one of them. And how long have you been a storyteller?
Oh, for over 40 years, wow. 40, hitting up towards 50 now, I'd say.
Okay.
Just... on and off, you know. I was a teacher by trade.
Okay.
So storytelling was handy for teaching, actually.
Yeah. Where were you based, Paddy?
My teaching career all in around Cork, City.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Paddy, tell us a story about Captain Fox.
Oh, Captain Fox.
Yes.
This is a Cork-based story, and you can look it up in a fantastic Google. And the facts, he did exist, and the incident happened, but it's the follow-on.
Yeah.
There's a place out just beyond Blarney called Máthéithe. And I'm into the Loganimica and the Irish place names.
Beautiful, yeah.
And Máthéithe means the place of the fleeing or the place where people fled.
Okay.
And a good friend of mine, Kate Corkery, storyteller as well, had me launching a book of Cork folk tales for her, helping to launch it a number of years ago. And she said, pick one story. And this is the one I picked.
Okay.
And there's a mass rock at Máthéithe, and Captain Fox got word that the illegal mass was on. This was in penal laws, Cromwellian times. Gathered his soldiers, snuck up on the mass early in the morning. I think it was a foggy day, and he killed the priest. I think there was price on their heads and everything anyway. Now, it varies what happened next. Did the people just chase him or... that his own soldiers were so appalled by what he did.
Okay.
But fairly soon after he killed the priest, he had to escape quickly or get out of there quickly, and he was going down the valley into the Shornock River, and his horse bolted for some reason and threw him off, and he was killed. And his men panicked then. They didn't know what to do next. Would they get the blame? And in the moment of panic, their solution was, we'll just bury him in the local graveyard fast, which they did, a shallow grave. But the best bit, Joe, is once night time fell, the corpses of all the Irish Catholic people who were buried in the graveyard weren't having it. They started talking to one another under the ground and saying, we're not staying here with this evil man. He's not one of us. He's an appalling man. He's evil. We are getting up and out of here. And I see Michael Jackson's Thriller. There's bony hands coming up out of the ground. They dug themselves up out of the grave. They took their little, that would have been very small. Some of them had no headstone. Some of them a small stone marker. And a few might have an iron cross. And I'm seeing them crawling up the hill and across a couple of fields. But they knew the rules of being dead. You must be back on the ground before morning. So when they saw the sky brightening, they reburied themselves. Isn't that a good one? Yeah, they reburied themselves in a new graveyard up the way. And from that time, that place became known as Martehe, the place of the fleeing, the place of the flight.
And is it still known as that? It is, obviously.
It is, yeah. In the English language signpost, when you're driving out that road, you'll see M-A-T-E-H-Y, Martehe. Martehe, I'm not even sure. But local people do go more with, like, the Irish. They say Martehe. And it's a little village, there's a church, etc. And Captain Fox's Bridge is still there beside the river, and the Mass Rock is still there. And even, obviously, Joe, that story is absolutely true.
But you see, I because of a recent conversation I had with a younger person, I think people are going to be baffled by the penal laws, which are what, the late 1690s into the late 1770s. But people, and when I told them, I had some in my head, obviously, from school, like no one could, no Catholic, they were all anti-Catholic, obviously, no Catholic masses, no Catholic priests, no Catholic could own a horse valued over a fiver, you couldn't own land, you couldn't inherit land. If you converted, to the Protestant religion, you would get certain benefits, significant benefits. You couldn't hold firearms. You couldn't vote. You couldn't be, you couldn't become a member of the legal profession, the judiciary. Education, this is where hedge schools came from, isn't it? Education was completely...
Correct. And a lot of Irish people had to immigrate to be educated in France and Spain, and places like the ones that could afford it. Daniel O'Connell was one such.
Yeah. Catholics couldn't enter Trinity. That's back then. That held until 1980 or something crazy.
It did.
Churches weren't allowed. Sure, they weren't. And if they were built, they had to be built from wood, not stone, and away from main roads. No person, when someone's out of the text, no person of the popish religion shall publicly or in private houses teach school or instruct youth in learning with this realm upon pain of a £20, imagine how much that was in those days, a £20 fine,
money.
And 3 months in prison for every such offence.
Correct.
If you taught,
like,
if you were a teacher.
There are mass rocks, there are mass rocks all over Ireland still, and a lot of them are, they're well kept, if you know what I mean. People know they're there and they're signposted, and it's a big part of our history, like.
Yeah, but it's a forgotten. When you say the penal laws to young people now, they haven't a clue what you're talking about. And by the way, the Crown also had rewards if you snitched on a priest or a teacher. But the rewards were levied upon the Catholic population within the area. In other words, if someone squealed and he got a fiver, the Crown went around.
The reward was always a tactic to get some, you know, that was always there. And sure, it's still going on in the world. They're doing it on the internet now. You know?
And if you converted to the Church of Ireland, you could inherit land. You couldn't if you...
Like the penal laws. And then the next big thing probably that left its mark was the famine. And they're still strong, and I think they're still in our psyche, you know?
Yeah. Well, remember, there are a lot of people alive today would know somebody who knew somebody, especially an older person when you were much younger, who knew somebody who survived the famine, obviously. And Paddy, what's the story about the red scarf set in Dingle? As was
totally different now, Joe.
This was one, Ryan's daughter. The red scarf.
When I heard a young English woman tell this story in Clannacilty one night, and I liked it, and it stayed in my head, and I decided to rewrite it and base it in Ireland, but write it as a ballad.
Okay.
So it has a twist at the end, as you'll see. So
we'll
it's not too long, but it's written in rhyme, in the ballad
flowers.
Of Dan McGrew and all.
Yeah,
these.
Of course. Yeah.
So here we go. We go for
yours,
it.
Yeah.
Thank you. The red scarf. Dennis O'Connor, that's Dinny Jim Dan, a young man from old Dingle Town. At football or fishing, he was the man. At both, he'd won fame and renown. When fishing at sea, he felt wild and free, and at football, he'd yet to be bet. And all were agreed that with skill and with speed, he'd put ball or big fish in the net. At a dance in the Grove, he met Mary O'Shea, and he knew from the moment they met, this beautiful girl had his mind in a whirl, and his heart was entwined in her net. All around his home place, it was plain from his face that Dennis was smitten for life, and people would say that Mary O'Shea would make him a gorgeous young wife. Law and Drolleen, they strolled down the Boreen. The Ran music still rang in his head. He held her tight on that bright moonlit night, and said, tell me the day we'll be wed. He gave her the ring. He felt like a king.
Yeah.
For her, 'twas the happiest time. And she giggled to see him go down on one knee and tell her a sweet, silly rhyme. He said, Mary, Mary, quite contrary, how you've won my heart. Mary, Mary, quite contrary, we'll never be apart. That night, neath the moon, they promised that soon they'd be married and happy together.
Right.
They'd build a new home just by the sea foam, and contented they'd live there forever. Then came a chance on a boat bound for France, for Dennis to earn great pay. He kissed both her cheeks, said, it's just a few weeks, you can meet me back down on the quay. Mary gave a soft sigh as she bade him goodbye, but she smiled as the boat sailed away, for she knew that ere long her young fisherman strong would return and would never more stray. At night, in her bed, thoughts of him filled her head, and she sometimes felt lonely and sad. Then his poem she'd recite, and 'twould bring her delight, and make her feel happy and glad. Mary, Mary, quite contrary, how you've won my heart. Mary, Mary, quite contrary, we'll never be apart. Out at sea, Dinny sweats, the work's hard as it gets, in sunshine, in wind, and in rain. Then a storm of great force blows them way off their course, and they end up in northern Spain. 'Twas in Santander, while sheltering there, through laneways and streets Dinny roamed, in a dusty old shop where he happened to stop, found a gift for his girlfriend at home. A silk scarf he saw, bright red as the haw. 'Twas the present he'd bring Mary back. He imagined the scene with her eyes emerald green and her long flowing hair coloured black. That silk scarf, bright red, danced a dream in his head. In a bright box he wrapped it up tight. His heart sang a song as their boat sped along when they set out for Ireland that night. Within a few days, they had reached Dingle Bay. On the quay were his mom and his dad. But as he drew near, his heart filled with fear. Their faces were downcast and sad. Tight, tight was their hold as their story they told. His Mary had just passed away. His loving heart broke with the words that they spoke. She'd be buried in Dingle that day. His cries filled the air. He sank down in despair. He thought of the present he'd brought her. Flung the box on the tide with the red scarf inside. It floated away on the water. Then, to church where inside he wept and he cried, she lay in her coffin sealed tight. He begged and implored to see her once more, to gaze on her beauty so bright. the lid was undone, and then everyone saw him bend, and then stagger and sway. Round her neck, white as milk, was the scarf of red silk which he'd thrown on the water that day. Sinead?
Well, you have me rattled now, Paddy. How did the scarf get into the...
Well, sure, that's it. These are the things, Joe, we don't understand.
And how did
and I'll tell you an interesting... Those stories go all around the world if you talk to storytellers. Yeah. And I told that story one time in Sligo 7 or 8 years ago. And sometimes people wait at the end of a session and have a conversation. And a woman walked up to me and she said, thanks very much for telling that Maori story.
Ah.
So now...
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yep.
Stay with us, Paddy. Yep. Paddy Macken.
Yeah. Paddy O'Brien.
I know you are another Paddy coming. Paddy Macken.
Oh, good man.
Can you make a better attempt at describing the stray sod to me than that Ludraman up in Leeds from Seamus O'Rourke?
I certainly wouldn't be able to beat that. But
what is a stray sod? What is your story?
My little story is here. I'm farming here out this day. And I had heard years ago that there was a stray sod in a particular field that's across the road from the house. It's quite a big field. There's 30 acres in it.
Okay.
And I was, at that time of the year, it was February, and we were lambing sheep.
Okay.
And one night my wife was going out to take cars, and she was going to have to take cars with her friends, and she'd be back at about 1 o'clock usually. And she said she'd have a look at the sheep.
Okay.
So I was in bed, and I was fast asleep, naturally enough. And next thing, she came home at about 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
And she drove the car and went out into the field. And at times she'd get out of the car to walk around to feed the sheep and go through them. And then when she went to leave the field, she couldn't find the gate.
Oh.
So she'd know this field as well as I think. I've been in the field thousands of times. She'd know the field as well as anybody. And she'd know all the ditches around.
Yeah.
There's a bit of a stream around it. But she could not find the gate. And she was going, this happened about 30 years ago. And she was going round and round. And she was over 2 hours in the field.
Wow.
And by the time she got into the house, she was in a flood of tears, in an awful state. And she eventually sat down, and that's the only story. But the coincidence for me was, I had heard it prior to that, that there was supposed to have been a stray sod out there. But it actually happened to her, which was really gobsmacked me. I'm not a real believer in all the fairy stuff, but still not. It actually, the story was that it was a stray sod in that particular field, and in that particular field, it actually happened to her.
That she couldn't find her way. Had she heard about the other...
She didn't know about the story at all.
That if you torn your coat inside out.
No, she didn't. No, she didn't. She eventually...
Seamus O'Rourke. Seamus, would it be known in the area? Would there be only certain fields that had a stray sod?
No, I thought it was something that usually if someone did something on the fairies would come out to get them on a particular night, so they would that stray sod could be anywhere.
Ah.
So you're
saying if you do find yourself in a situation where you can't find your way out of a field, you have per se inter alia stood on a stray sod that you didn't know about.
Yes, and more than likely you have in some way upset the fairies. And of course, back then we always left the lone bushes and the fairy forts alone, but as time has gone on...
That's clear now, that's very clear.
Yeah.
It's now, you've been on 23 minutes, Seamus, and now I understand what you're talking about.
Well, you see, the other man stepped on a stray sod telling that other story.
And apparently another caller, we'll have more in a minute, you started something. A stray sod is a clump of grass enhanced by fairies. If a person steps on one, they will become disorientated, or disoriented even, and lost, even in, Paddy Macken, even in familiar surroundings. So your wife knew that field inside out and she couldn't get out.
Yeah.
Okay.
She was 2 hours in the field trying to get out.
And apparently there's an Irish bar on the Costa Fortune, the Costa Blanca, called, wait for it, the Stray Sod. And as someone else has pointed out to me, why don't you read out, these are from 1690, Why don't you read out the penal laws from 1690 and you might understand the wolf tones? The Catholic Church couldn't keep registers. They were forbidden to exercise their religion, forbidden to receive education, enter profession, hold public office, engage in trade or commerce, Catholics. They were forbidden to live in a corporate town or within 5 miles thereof, horse no greater than fiver, forbidden to own land, to lease land, to accept a mortgage on land, forbidden to vote, forbidden to keep any arms for his protection, forbidden to hold a life annuity, forbidden to buy land from a Protestant, forbidden to receive a gift of land from a Protestant, forbidden to inherit land from a Protestant, unless you turn Protestant. He was forbidden to inherit anything. Anything from a Protestant. This is a Catholic that they refer to as he. He was forbidden to rent any land that was worth more than 30 shillings a year. Philip, he was forbidden to reap from his land any profit exceeding a third of the rent. He could not be guardian to a child. He could not, when dying, leave his infant children under Catholic guardianship. He could not attend Catholic worship. He was supposed to attend Protestant worship. He could not himself educate the child. He could not send his child to a Catholic teacher. He could not employ a Catholic teacher to come to his child. And he could not send his child abroad to receive education. That's from 1690. To about 1770. No wonder the Wolf Tones filled the electric picnic with those laws going way back. Back after the break.
Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
By the way, Seamus O'Rourke is on in the Lime 3 Theatre in Limerick tonight. Don't miss it. It's called Indigestion. It's his one man piece. He written, performed, directed. Lit, painted by himself, and that's on tonight in the wonderful Lime 3 Theatre, and his book is called Leaning on Gates, and that's the one nominated that will shoot him to international fame. And the other book is called Standing in Gaps, two memoirs, well worth a read. And thanks to Seamus for mentioning the Stray Sod. Thanks to the wonderful Paddy O'Brien, not just for the red scarf, but for mentioning the penal laws, because that's where people are now going and with disbelief. And I know they were a few hundred years ago, but anyway, they were unbelievable. Joe Taylor, Joseph, good afternoon.
Joe, could I have thought to?
Come on.
Joe, two stories, Joe. Yeah. One is, I always thought that the Stray Sod was some sort of the Fair Gorta, or the Hungry Grass, which I'm sure you've heard of, the Hungry Grass.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I know the Hungry Grass was relating back to the time of the famine, but I lived in Sligo, Joe, very near the Leitrim border, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Just about 200 yards from the Leitrim border. And I was coming down one time from Tormore. It was a big hill, big mountain behind the house where I lived.
Okay.
And I was well used to going up and down, because there was an old mine at the top of the mountain. I used to go up looking for bits and pieces. But anyway, coming down, Joe, I went into a field. And now, the field hadn't been used very much. The rushes in it were about a metre high or more. I could not get out of the field. I said, I'll go back to the gate where I came in. Couldn't find the gate, going round and round. And after about 40 minutes, I said, oh, to hell with this. But I remembered my father telling me the way to get out of it was take off your jacket, turn it inside out and put it back on. And I said, no, if anyone sees me now, they'll surely. But anyway, I did it. And I found a gap to get out of the field. But I was a good 40 minutes going around looking for a way to get out.
Wow. And you knew about the jacket inside out?
Oh, my father had told me about it. Yeah. Now, okay. He didn't call it the Stray Sod. Unfold something or other he had on it. Unfold me, the Irish. I can't remember what the other Irish word was. But he had the Fair Gorta of his Unfold something or other. Were the two stories he had. Of course, people know now about the Hungry Grass. But there's a good explanation for why people fell down on the Hungry Grass, Joe. And again, it goes back to religion. People who are going to communion of a Sunday would be required to fast from 12 o'clock the night before, from midnight the night before you went to communion. So you weren't even allowed to take a drink of water. And maybe you were, I'm not sure. But you weren't allowed to eat anything after 12 o'clock.
Of course,
so people who had low blood sugar, Joe, would be fasting from, we'll say, 8 o'clock the previous day, because they wouldn't be eating anything. and they'd have a very low blood sugar. They'd head off usually to walk to Mass and maybe down over the fields or the prayer, the Mass way to, mm-hmm. to get to Mass. And if they felt a sudden weakness coming on them, they thought they'd stepped on the fair gorta or the hungry grass. And the hungry grass was where somebody during the famine had fallen down and died from hunger. And if you fell down on the hungry grass, you could not get up without eating something.
Okay,
and the idea was...
Yes.
The rationale behind it was that your blood sugar would be so low, or some people would be diabetics and they wouldn't know about it, that unless they got some sugar or some carbohydrate into their system, they could actually go into a coma lying on the hungry grass.
Now, stay with us because I want you to do the story about, tell me the story about the Duke of Hamilton who sacked Sligo Abbey. Brian, I'll cut to Brian first. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text number if you have stories. Brian.
Hello there.
The Stray Sod.
Yes, well, I'm originally from County Galway, and we used to call it the 4G in Mara.
Okay, 4G in Mara.
4G in Mara.
It was called the 4G in Mara.
And what's it? And not that we have to translate, obviously, C is Mara. What's the 4G in? What's the forward spell 4G in?
Forge. Forge, with small sod, Joe.
Okay.
Forge being a sod.
And you,
sorry for interrupting you. Go ahead.
No, you're in County Galway. But did you ever hear of anyone that stepped on the stray sod?
When we were growing up, we'd be always told to be wary of the 4G matter. And we had one neighbour one night that were playing cards in a house, and mm-hmm. he went, you know, that time he'd go across the fields to go home, and he went through a field he was very familiar with, but he got lost inside and he couldn't get out, and he'd wait there till the brightness came in the morning before he could find his way out of it.
Wow. And if you knew the story of the stray sod and you walk into a field and because you couldn't find your way, then you realise you couldn't get out of the field. If you knew the story of the stray sod, would that help you not to panic? Do you follow me, Brian?
Well, it should help you not to panic, but you'll be kind of avoiding those, you'll be deprived of that particular field.
Would you be able to point out to me that field there, four rows across?
Yes, I could point out the field to the field that we were told to keep away from.
Wow.
Especially only at night time. We'd not cross the journey in the hours of darkness.
And 4G in Mara. And if you, okay, I know I'm in a field that has a stray sod, 4G in Mara. I get lost. Would I not be just best lying down, pulling the coat round me inside or out, and sleep until bright, because brightness would release me, wouldn't it? Sunlight.
Brightness, sunlight will definitely release you from it.
Okay. I mean, nerves are gone. That's a great story. The 4G Mara. Joe Taylor, the story of the Duke of Hamilton who sacked Sligo Abbey.
Oh, yes. He came over with the Gaologlics. They were the mercenary soldiers, usually from Scotland.
Yeah.
And there was an abbey there in Sligo. I'm not sure what the monks were. I'm not sure what order they belonged to, Joe. But anyway, he sacked the abbey, and he took one of the monks as a prisoner, and he was driving him before him. Now, the monk was wearing the white robes that they wear. And they were heading out towards Leitrim, towards what's now the town of Manor Hamilton. And I think the mountains were either King's Mountains or O'Rourke's Mountains. I'm not sure which ones. But they were heading up the mountain. Now, there was no paths or tracks or anything. But they had the monk going in front of them in the white robe, and they were taunting him, and they were sort of telling him, go on ahead there, show us the way, you walk ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
But a mist or a fog descended on the top of the mountain. And they thought they were following the white robes of the monk, but in actual fact, he had slipped away in the mist.
Ah.
And what they were now following was a sheep. And the sheep, of course, you see, knew the mountain well because they'd have their own tracks. But the sheep was heading towards the edge of the cliff, and the sheep just jumped down onto a little ledge. But the Gaologlics and Hamilton went over the edge, and the horses and the bridles and the whole lot there were people saying that you could still find bits of the horse tack at the bottom of the cliffs. But they went down nearly 200 to 300 feet, Joe, and locally it's called Scotsman's Leap.
Wow. And that was his punishment for sacking the abbey.
That was his punishment for sacking the abbey, yeah.
And did he kill the monks as well?
Well, I don't know whether they put them to the sword or not when they were sacking the abbey, but certainly they took one of the monks as a prisoner and drove them ahead of them, as they were heading back.
And no animals were harmed in the making of that fairy story.
No, the sheep just jumped down onto a little ledge.
Of course. No. And we had an example last week of the dog up in Donegal. That was gone for 2 weeks, sat on a ledge, and wasn't there one a few weeks ago, maybe down in Clare, of a cow?
That's right.
Get onto a ledge and the mountain rescue people. I don't know how they did it, but they did it. The mountain rescue people got them off. How are you keeping, Joseph?
Not too bad at all, Joe.
People know
Not
Joe Taylor from his acting career and his various other incarnations. He's the man who invented the reincarnation, so to speak, of the Flood Tribunal on the Vincent Brown show many years ago.
Yes.
Many years ago.
The great James Gogarty.
Yeah.
Will we get a receipt for this, Joe? That was the famous catchphrase.
Yeah.
Will we get a receipt for this, for the £40,000?
What a great man.
No receipt given, Joe.
He's passed now. What a great man.
Well,
and when you were doing the reenactments, did you do the? I know you went down every day to Dublin Castle, but did you try and do the accents as well? You've James Gogarty very well.
Well, I did, Joe, as well as I could. Although Frank Dunlop told me it was wonderful. He said close but no cigar.
Okay, the great Joe Taylor. Thanks, thanks indeed, Joe. Joe at rt.ie 51551. Here I am, the Stray
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Visit one of our 44 stores across Ireland for quality curtains and bedding at great prices. Find your perfect style today.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Daniel Corley is a well-known Roscommon historian. Tell us about, where's it, the entrance to the portals of the other world, the chief portal of the other world. Where is that, Daniel?
How are you, Joe? It's just outside of the village of Tulsk in Midroscommon. So if you're driving from Dublin to Castlebar, you'd be passing through the village.
And is the sign posted, like, is it on, well, is it on Google Earth?
It is a very sensitive monument, so it's an archaeological site. And we'd like to try and manage it as best we can in terms of not over-trafficking it with visitors.
Yeah,
it's part of the wider Rathcrochan archaeological landscape. So
it's a
very large archaeological plateau, so the equivalent of the Hill of Tara in the west, the only problem being it's bigger and better in every way. So the cave at Ona Gath, as we call it, is regarded in our early Irish literature. Some of these stories are written down 1,200, 1,400 years ago. Has been a portal to the Irish otherworld. So we talk about it in academic terms as the otherworld, but like what you're saying with the previous callers, the fairy world, in a sense, a parallel dimension that we would have conceived of in our ancestors, and probably partly responsible as to how the world changes. It's responsible for, I suppose, different things that occur that we have no explanation for. So this particular time of the year is very prominent for that perspective, because we're marking the point of transition from autumn into winter, and that would have been marked traditionally by the festival of Samhain. We know today, obviously, as Iha Hauna or Halloween. So on that last night between autumn and winter, it's said that a whole litany of creatures and manifestations emerged out of the other world through the cave at Uf Crocan or Owen Agat to create the world ready for winter. So they talk about flocks of red birds whose breath is so foul it takes the leaves off the trees. They talk about giant wild boars, and every piece of vegetation that they touch withers for up to 7 years. They talk about female werewolves, I don't know either female, three-headed monsters, giant cats, otherworldly armies, all of which come out on the last night to create the world ready for winter. And it's all curated into place by a goddess of war that resides, a famous goddess of war you see her today, perched on the shoulder of Cú Chulainn in the window in the GPO in the General Post Office on O'Connell Street as the Raven. So she's known as the Morrigan, and she's the one that resides in the cave, and she comes out of the cave on Samhain night basically to manage all this catonic energy that's going on out there as the world transitions from autumn to winter, and then brings them back down and closes the door at the end of the night.
And that is tonight?
In essence, I mean, that's what we mark today in modern Halloween, and the bones of the origins of Halloween is based in our early Irish literature, and obviously with places like Owen Na Gach, the Rathcrochan.
God, you have me worried now.
Well, that's the intention.
Is that an actual cave?
It is, yeah. So it's partly man-made and it's partly natural. So there's a natural cavern. So this is this is limestone country. Roscommon is limestone country, so
yeah, of course, yeah.
It's basically one of the natural fissures that occurs in the limestone. And millennia ago, our ancestor decided to attach an entrance to it and very deliberately curate and kind of create a passageway, a formal passageway down into this cave. And it's even marked with Om inscriptions, so Om writing being the earliest form of writing known to the Irish. So it refers to two very famous figures of very early mythology. We have our Queen Maeve mentioned on one of the Om stones, and we also have a great Connacht warrior called Freoc, who's central part of the whole narrative out here.
But as you say, I presume today, you cannot go into the cave. They're protected.
Well, what we do is we provide guided tours to the entrance, give people an impression of what it's about, and kind of talk about the archaeology with them, and then we talk about the mythology, and we draw the lines of continuity and connectedness between that and even in terms of what we celebrate today in terms of Halloween, because the echoes of what was occurring in the past times is still relevant to us, you know, in the form of disguising and trick-or-treating and various different aspects of that.
And you mentioned Tara, so does that mean, Daniel, around Uwe and Cathagas Rock Crohan, there would be many other mounds and monuments, would there? Like in Tara?
Certainly so. Yeah, absolutely. So Rock Crohan is home to 240 identified archaeological sites.
Wow.
And they're all encased in a very small area of about 6 square kilometres. So basically Tara and the Hill of Ushnock, Owen Mock or Navan Fort up in Armagh, Dunallina is the Leinster equivalent to Rathcrohan, and the Rock of Cashel is the Munster equivalent, and they all share certain commonalities in terms of archaeology. But these are great places for the elite dead of our ancestors to be buried. So these are great burial grounds. They're also great places of assembly and gathering. Mm. So if you think about the likes of Electric Picnic or Crow Park in All Ireland, Final Day, this is the equivalent in Connacht in prehistoric and early historic times. And the times in which this place would have been very heavily populated would be at the great seasonal assembly. So the likes of Imbolc, as we know it today, St. Bridget's Day, the Altena, beginning of summer, Lunasa at the beginning of autumn, and Samhain, obviously, the beginning of winter. And we mark those points in the year because they mark the agricultural calendar. Because Samhain marked the times that you brought your livestock home, because you would have had your livestock up into the wider districts for grazing through the summer as you grew your cereals at home, and then the opportunity to bring them back home was when the cereals had been harvested. So your stock home and any animals you couldn't keep through the winter, you'd feast on them, and you'd have one great last celebration before, I suppose, counting your corn and counting your provisions in the hope that you'd get through the winter.
And when would I be released from the? Is that St. Bridget's Day? Is that when I get through the winter, so to speak?
That's it. So the first crop on the land, the soil temperature coming up, and lambing season, all converge itself upon Imbolc, and then Bealtaine is then when you start to purify your animals, because you'll be sending them away, so you want them to be safe and productive. So you'd have your fires at Bealtaine and you'd run your livestock through it, or you'd engage in different kind of rituals to protect the stock, and obviously hope that them being in fit and accord will mean that you as a population and as individuals can go on. So I mean that's the deep tiedness that we have as Irish people to the land and everything that revolves around that, and these celebrations, these festivals are stitched into that. They're vital parts of the whole narrative.
And in fact, I've just finished reading Cecilia Hearn's new novel. It's fantastic, called Into the Storm. As John Boyne said recently in the Irish Times, she doesn't get the literary recognition she deserves. I think it's a 20 years. It's a fabulous. But there's a lot of Imbolc in, and there's a lot of fairy trees, and there's a lot of rag trees, and there's a lot of shape shifting as well. But it's a fine piece. But as you say, it's embedded in our. It's set in modern day Ireland, but there's lots of references to our ancestry and what went before us, whether. And by the way, if hell is a Christian construct, Daniel, is the
absolutely
it's
a hell.
But is the other world? Is the other world hell? Hell? Do you know what I mean?
No. I describe it as my visitors is in effect a proto paradise. So in our early literature, you don't have to die to enter the other world at all. You can go across the sea. So if you remember, Oisín and Niamh went across the sea to Tir na n-Óg in the Finn cycle of tales. You can go into certain hills. Auspicious hills, you can go underneath certain lakes. There's a lake beside Roscommon Castle, you're about 15 kilometres away from us, and that was reputed as an entrance to the Irish of the world. You can go into Brú na Boyne or Newgrange in County Meath as an entrance to the other world, and you can go into Uath Crook and Horath Crohan, Owen Agat, to access the other world. And look, if you think about the other world, it's a place of suspended seasons, it's bounteous food, you don't grow old as quickly, and there's a change in terms of time, and that's how our ancestors understood the world around them. And a lot of what you spoke about with regard to the Stray Sod, or in terms of the way in which the world is treating us could have been imparted upon the role that the other world had in our lives. So, for instance, it was very important to protect your cattle, in particular in terms of milk production, as you got into summertime, for fear that the she or the fairies, as we talk about them now, may have dried up the cow, so she wouldn't be able to provide milk anymore. Yeah. And it was somewhat cursed in a sense. So you went about your daily routines in view of all of this, and this is something that we still do up until the present day. You know, you've got aspects of Halloween that maybe are falling out of view today, but for instance, you should never leave your home after dusk on Samhain night. That was because of the catonic forces that are at play at night time. Not wanted to be apprehended about. Well, that's it. So, well, we have street lights now to kind of guide the passage.
Of course, that's true.
The past time, you're left in that place of uncertainty.
And people, you know, people have the torches on their mobile phones.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, Daniel, I see people. Where is the Rathcrohan Visitor Centre? They're heading down to you.
Oh, look, they're very welcome. We have a visitor centre here in the village in Tulsk. It's open 26 years now. It's run exclusively by the community.
Well done.
So it's a charity organisation, and it's our job to impart our knowledge and entertain people and interpret this fabulous landscape that we have.
So if people want to go on an organised tour, obviously they'd have they'd have to book in advance, wouldn't they?
Yeah, indeed we do. Yeah. So we have a booking system on our website, rathcrohan.ie, and that allows the visitor to explore what Rathcrohan means, and then also to book the tour if they so wish. And we're open all year round. So
and anyone driving through Tulsk will know it, because it's a very distinctive, strong coloured building, isn't it? It's beside
big red building.
The big, isn't there a restaurant or a pub there in Tulsk?
There's a restaurant next door to us, O'Connor's, and we have
loads of parking.
And even just for the purpose of Halloween and Samhain, we have. We've garnered one of our mounds just beside the visitor centre with a fabulous sculpture of the Morrigan in her raven form. So that's lit up in the evening. So there was a local artist, Roscommon, Orla
Clahar. Daniel, is this what you do, pardon the pun, in real life? Are you just a volunteer?
This is my job, yeah. This is our job. I'm 11 years employed here in Tulsk
to
deliver archaeology and knowledge.
It's not magic.
That's what we love to, you know. Yeah.
Okay, the website is there. It's called the Rathcrohan Visitor Centre, isn't it?
That's correct,
it's in Tulsk, T-U-L-S-K. You have us all mesmerised now, Daniel. We're on our way. It's incredible. And will I get close? Will I be able to stand at the entrance to Uaibh na gCaht? Will I be able to stand beside the portal to the other world?
If you're brave enough to, I'll hold your hand.
Okay,
no problem.
Thanks very much. Sounds wonderful, Daniel. Well done. Daniel, local historian, Rathcrohan Visitor Centre, Tulsk County, Roscommon. Another fantastic, obviously. I've never heard of it. I've driven through, I've seen the building, and I thought it was just a local visitor centre, but obviously it's connected with the caves and the history. Sean O'Leary in County Kerry. Sean.
How are you going?
Okay, and to Sean, you have a stray sod story for me.
I have. My father told me this many years ago.
Okay.
And it was about a family. There was twins, a boy and a girl.
Right.
And the girl was sent to England to work in a house over in London.
Mm-hmm.
And the young fella stayed here, and their mother died during the year.
Okay.
And he kind of went a bit dull and moody. He was playing cards and he was out drinking and going to the houses, you know, where all the brackets be going on.
Yes.
And so for Halloween, the father gave him one ultimatum that he had to be home on time before dusk, or say 10 o'clock, and he had to be there to be at home with the father because he'd be on his own.
Okay, 10
and
o'clock.
Of course, you know yourself when you go for one or the other or for whatever. Time got ahead of him.
Yes.
And he was playing cards, and then he realized he had to get home. So he decided that he would take the shortcut through the big house, and of course their lands would be full of stray sods because of all the bad things they would be doing, and that was all right.
Mm-hmm.
He got caught in a stray sod, and I can tell you I have my own experience with this. Mm-hmm. But you just can't find where you're going. You're going in one direction, but it's like the outside is turning again, so you're constantly lost.
Okay.
And I think that's the real feeling you get of being constantly lost. But meanwhile, while he was lost in the stray sod in Ireland,
mm-hmm.
his sister went into a trance in London in the house, and she was wandering around the house, and she was banging into walls, and she nearly jumped out a window at one stage. and only that there was a woman from up the west, up around Galway or Sligo or Mayo or somewhere like that. She knew what was going on, and she said to turn the girl's jacket inside out.
Okay.
And that saved the girl. She fell down. Wow. She slept the whole night. She fell down, but the brother was able to get out then when they changed the sister's jacket around. And they reckon that in the morning,
yeah,
they found his pipe in her jacket.
Wow. So he couldn't get out of the field. Same time as the sister, his twin sister in England, was feeling the exact same thing.
She had the exact same thing as he had.
But she was in a house when she was banging walls and trying to get out.
That's it. And she had the same sensation as he was having. But only that they saved her, they were able to save him at the same time.
By turning the jacket inside out. And then the following morning, they found his pipe.
In her jacket in England, in London.
Brilliant. 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 What do you do tonight down in Kerry, Sean?
You stay inside, though.
Yes, yes.
You think of all the great ancestors that have gone past and who are with us always, minding us and guiding us.
Okay.
Well, you know, actually, just listening to that lovely man there from Lusk, is this Lusk?
From Rathcrohan, was it Sean Daniel Corley?
Yes.
Tulsk, 24 Tulsk. Hours from Tulsk in County Roscommon.
That's it, a great man. But we would see in Bologas here, it's the starting of that the sheep or the goats or the cows are coming into the midst. So there's a real hope and a joy and a faith that things will get better, that the lambs will be born.
Okay.
So it's a lovely thing to have around the 1st of February.
Okay. Well said. Lovely, lovely stories. Good to market Sean O'Leary. He's also known as...
Walter Rother, Shame machine.
And he's known as Sean and Shanachie. Michael Common, sorry for holding you. Michael, you grew up around Leitrim.
Yes, Joe. I grew up in a place, the top of the Sleeve near the mountains, in a place called Sleeve na Killa. So I would have heard a lot of those stories that Seamus was talking about, the stray sod, and particularly if it was a fairy fort in a field. You'd be told never to go into it at night time. And the big reason for turning the jacket inside out was from Cardin by Dad. He used to say that if you turn the jacket inside out, you fool the fairies. So that would break the spell.
Yeah.
So then they get out, you'd be able to get out of the field. But it was common around, you know, any of those rural areas. And of course, there's an awful lot of storytelling. I used to go to local houses with my dad in the winter time. You know, there'd be a group of men there telling stories. There's no telly. There's some of them had no radio, so they'd spend the night telling all these sort of stories. And the other one, of course, was, as somebody mentioned earlier, the Forgurtha.
The Forgurtha, yeah, the hunger.
So we used to go to the mountain on a Sunday looking at sheep or after sheep, and he'd say, well, make sure now you bring a piece of bread with you, because if you get the Forgurtha, you mightn't be able to make it home. And that was, as was said previously, if you happen to walk in the footsteps of somebody who had died, maybe in the famine times, that you could get this extreme hunger and you wouldn't be able to make your way back home. So the thing was, make sure you had some bit of food with you if you were going away. You know, you could be walking miles in the mountain, the Plegan and Sleeve near the mountains. We would have been the second last house on the top of the mountain. So we'd often have on a Sunday go off. That was one thing that the old men did. They go off looking at sheep or searching to see whether the sheep okay once a week up on the mountains, and just to make sure to bring some food with you. And there was a place called the Poorhouse up. Now there was no building there in my time, but there was a building in my father's time, and that poorhouse was basically a soup kitchen for people who used to go across the mountain to the other side, to Ochnashiellan and Ballinamore. Mm-hmm. And people would sub off there for food. And it was also said that that was where a lot of people died as well from hunger in the famine time.
Okay. So the stories,
and a lot of these stories, unfortunately, are lost. Like I recorded some stories from, I had an uncle who died there 2 years ago in Birmingham. He was in his 100th year, and he would have a lot of those old stories as well. But unfortunately, all those old men, you know, a lot of those stories died with them. Like, I remember my dad telling...
No, keep going, yeah.
Telling the story about way back when the priests were on their own and there was mass rocks and that in the parish. This priest was on the run one day and he saw the British soldiers somewhere on the road, and he hid in dense undergrowth somewhere not far off the road. And I don't know, it was 20 or 30 soldiers that marched by, and he wasn't found. But about a week later, he was on his own. He met one of these soldiers, I think in a local town, and the soldier approached him and he said, I saw you in the hedge the other day as you walked by. Mm-hmm. And the priest said to him, he said, well, have you been baptized? Only somebody who was baptized would have been able to spot me. And the soldier said, yeah. He said, I was baptized as a Catholic. These are sort of old stories.
Okay, and because all we hear about Halloween now is trick or treat. Whatever that means.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Well, I know what it means.
Well, the old trick or treat years ago was we have an apple hanging from the ceiling dunking it in the basin. So that was the old trick or treat. And it's developed a lot more into.
Then it was help the Halloween party when we were kids. Michael Cornyn. Sorry, I'm misreading an RN as an M, I think. Michael Cornyn, thanks indeed, Michael. Des White and that boy, where there's a festival tonight, the Pooka Festival. Des White.
Hello. Hello, Joe.
Well, how are you? What's happening?
I'll tell you what's happening tonight. We have the Pooka Festival starting in the town here.
Yes.
And this is a story about my father, an eerie story. We're an old family in the town, and this occurred in 1939, in the autumn of 1939.
Okay.
And it's connected to the green, the fair green, where the Pooka Festival is starting tonight. Mm-hmm. He was getting married the next day in that winter of 39, yeah. And he said goodbye to his pals, and came down the town and went through a stile on the green to get across a shortcut to the far side to go and visit his wife's people, you see.
Right, okay.
So he stepped out on the stile.
Yeah.
And he started walking.
Yeah.
And he was walking and walking and walked all night and could not get out of that green. And he told me it was the stray sod. And with the break of dawn, he eventually found a stile, and there were 6 stiles on the green, you know.
Yeah, and he couldn't find one of them during the night.
And he never forgot it, because he was one of a couple of other people from around here that stepped on the stray sod in the fair green. It was a famous green. Back in 1922, Buffalo Bill and Sitting Bull came there in a circus.
Yeah, we're only talking about Geronimo yesterday. So Buffalo Bill and Sitting
Buffalo
Bull.
Bill's Wild West show came to that green.
To that boy in County Meath.
That boy in County Meath, yeah.
What year was that?
It was 1922.
Okay. So tonight, what time do we assemble at that boy tonight?
Around 6:30, I think.
And where do we assemble?
At that fair green where I was talking about.
Oh, everyone knows. And Des, I presume your grandfather got married the next day when he eventually got out of the field.
He just about made it.
I can imagine.
By the time he got home,
he was exhausted. And freshened up.
But he didn't see my wife's people or my mother's people before the wedding anyway. He just about made the wedding.
Thank God you wouldn't be here, Des. Good morning. Everyone in that boy, ants around. You know, the Pooka Festival tonight, 6:30. Fair Green, that boy. Joe at RT. Count to me. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover our new autumn collection with fresh designs and cosy colours. In store or at harrycurry.com.
Joe Duffy! Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
By the penal laws of over 400 years ago also applied to non-Anglican Protestants, i.e. dissenters, as they were known, just to give a fuller picture. Septa Dungan. Septa, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. I'm a bit shook here now, to be honest. The stray sod. Yes.
The stray sod, yes, indeed. My husband tells the story of his mother back in the 1940s.
Okay.
She was a farming lady, and she crossed over the fields at night time to some of the cow calving or something to that effect. and her brother George was with her. And they went round and round and round the fields when they had their business done with the cow.
Yeah.
And they couldn't find their way back.
Wow.
No matter what they did, they went round and round and round. And my husband's father was a very handy man, and he'd a wind charger, okay. which he had his own electricity. So he would have dry and wet batteries at the time, and he worked the electricity. And when they weren't coming back, he decided he'd go out and have a look and put on the light. And
good
as soon
man.
As the light came on, yeah. yes, they could find their way back.
Incredible.
Because my husband's theory was on the stray sod that there was no electricity in the country. The horizons were black. Everything was black. You couldn't
yeah,
see where
okay.
you were going.
Good point, yeah.
You know, and there was no electricity in the country here for till 1953. And we're talking about the 1940s here. So everything was so, so dark. So that was his theory on the stray sod, that there was no such thing. So this would probably put a different slant on all the fairy stories that we've heard today.
The electricity, isn't that fascinating? And you're right, because even if there wasn't a light in the field or the next field, you could look today, you could look into the distance and you would see a light that would give you a sense of direction. When did electricity come to that area, your area?
1953.
Isn't it just incredible?
Isn't
began,
it? Yes.
I think it began, didn't it, in 1946 after the emergency?
Yes. 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 And then it was that time, by the time we got it around here.
And I know Niall Williams, that great, great writer, has one of his, he's about six novels at this stage. Long distance for the book, or a number of them. One of them is based around electricity coming to the village of Faha. If I'm right, I'm talking off the top of my head now. So again, it's love, an incredible time in Ireland, wasn't it, when we think of it?
Yeah, absolutely.
That
absolutely.
Up to the 1950s, we didn't have electricity. Imagine trying to explain that to your grandchildren.
To the young
I don't know
people.
If you have grandchildren, except.
I have, of course.
Yeah, imagine trying to explain. Talk about explaining.
They couldn't.
Yeah.
Yes, they couldn't ever envisage that at all. I think the children of today could never envisage that.
So talk about explaining the penal laws. Good God.
Yes.
Good God. No. Okay, this is Happiness by Niall Williams, and he has a new novel out. He was on with Miriam last Sunday. He's a great, great writer. Again, but I think he doesn't do a lot. He doesn't do a lot of the celebrity circuit. Maybe he's right, but. That's about the coming of electricity. And that's a good theory, Septa, that the stray sod may have disappeared when electricity came to Ireland. Okay, good to meet you, Margaret, Septa. Thank you indeed.
Joe,
back
thank
after
you.
This. Thank you.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
Joe Duffy! Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Jude Boyle, what part of the country are you in, Jude?
Up here in Donegal, Joe.
Donegal, tell us, where does the stray sod story sit in Donegal? Tell us.
Well, it would be that a stray sod comes from a coffin that has been laid on the ground, you know, where men would be carrying the coffin, they'd be laid on the ground to rest themselves. Now, long years ago, there was no way of transporting a coffin, only carrying it to the local graveyard.
Okay.
Now, there is a local graveyard beside this particular field where I got lost. And you had to have your 2 feet within the space of the coffin in order, you know, that you would get lost. Now, you wouldn't get lost if you had 1 foot on it, but you would get lost if you had 2 feet on it.
Ah.
Yeah.
And so the stray sod, called the Donegal lore, is folklore, is which happens when you're carrying a coffin to a grave, the men would rest, or the carriers, the pallbearers would rest, lay the coffin down, gather their breath about them and their wind about them, and off to go again. Now, what happened to you, and what age were you?
Well, I was about 12 years old, and this particular field I was very familiar with, and I used to go to dig potatoes for my mother on my uncle's farm. Now, I crossed the ditch into this particular field, and all of a sudden, I lost myself. I couldn't know where I was going. I recognised the whole field. I recognised the ditches. I seen everything. There was also a swamp in the field, and I was heading for the swamp, and the water was practically up to my knees in water. And I thought, no, this isn't the way to go. Wow. So I turned and I went back. And I still was stretching myself to see my uncle's house.
Yeah.
But I've heard of this thing of if you ever get lost, to turn your coat inside out and you'd be okay.
Okay.
Yeah, but unfortunately, I wasn't wearing a coat. Yeah. So, it just clicked with me then. I seen the gap in the field and I headed for the gap and okay. I went straight to my uncle's house. Yeah, but I was in that field oftentimes afterwards, but it never happened. It only happened to me once.
Yeah. And you could see the house. Could you see light? Was there, what year was this, Jude, do you think, working backwards, if you were around 10 or 12?
Yeah, this was around probably the mid-60s, late 60s, yeah. Yeah.
Well, not everywhere, but I think the last place I got electricity apparently was Waterville in Kerry. That was 1975. By the way, have you any idea how long you were lost for, Jude? When you stood
that I have no idea, Joe, but I know it was quite a while.
Yeah.
It was quite a while before I could get my bearings again. And even though it was very, very peculiar, even though you would know the field and you would know all the ditches, nothing was telling you where to go to this particular ditch and cross it and you'll be okay. Nothing. It just didn't cross your mind. You've seen it everywhere, but you just didn't know how to get out.
As a fellow said, are you any the better of a Jude?
Oh.
I'm none the better.
Don't know.
Great story. Great story.
I don't know, Joe.
You sound a good fettle. You sound a good fettle above and done again. Okay, Jude, good and all good. One more man before I go. Jude, good and all good. Apologies. Now I'm sounding rude. I don't mean to, but there's so many calls. And we'll go back. And up tomorrow, we got calls about Sheridan, Lefanu, or Lefanu. And the only connection I ever had was I went to school in Lefanu Road in Ballyfermot. But he's supposed to be one of the best ghost stories writers ever. And unremarked and apparently forgotten apart from a few people. Jerry Bowen, are we back to the stray sod?
Well, I hope I don't go astray telling you the story.
Don't.
The neighbour's dogs kept us up all night here barking at the turnips we have here. We have dirt turnips carved at the house and they were over barking and our dog was barking out at them.
Oh, they didn't. They got the fright. The poor dogs and the bangers tonight in Dublin. Okay, and the cities and the towns. Jerry, tell us your...
Yeah, Joe, we have a cairn. We have an earth-covered cairn, which is a burial tomb on the land here. And there's a hollow in the middle of it.
Okay.
And the story goes that a man dug down a couple of centuries ago. He was looking for treasure.
Right.
And he didn't get down to the bottom of it. He didn't get right into the tomb, but he had to go home in the evening time and milk his cows. And one of his cows, a very quiet cow, attacked him. And normally quiet cow, and drove a horn into his eye, and then drove a horn into his ear. And from that time on, then he could see like from the world like everyone else seen from his good and from his good eye and ear, but from his damaged eye and ear, all he could hear mm-hmm. was ghosts and spirits, and they taunted him for the rest of his life.
Oh, God.
He didn't live very long after that.
I can imagine.
That hollow is still it's still in the cairn to this day.
Okay, I'm not doing you justice with time, but unfortunately, I'm out of it. You have a self-published book called The Cleanings 3. Is that correct?
The Cleanings 3, George.
Well done.
They got from the Leitrim Design House or the Reading Room in Kerry.
Great place.
Channel.
Well,
Leitrim can be bought online.
Leitrim Design House have a great website. I've looked at it before. Good to meet him. I got Jerry Bowen. Jerry is above in Sligo. Annette Egan's a series producer. Shanna Gorman produced. BCO's Leon Dunn. Harry Buckless was in sound. Anna Geary is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover our new autumn collection with fresh designs and cozy colours. In-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.